Bob and I'm an addict.
Hey, Bob.
I would like to thank the organizers, Keith, and all the rest for the honor to be here, which is truly an honor. Come out here and share some experience, strength, and hope. I started out earlier in the week. I've known about this for about 5-6 months now. And my sponsor and I talked about it. We kind of had it planned out. I got the call from Keith a month and a half ago. But I've kind of managed to let my life get as crazy as those that have been here for a minute. And we pray for all these beautiful things to happen in our lives, and they begin to materialize. And the next thing you know, you've got either a couple of jobs, a family, a household, and a whole bunch of other shit that you're doing. And, Friday rolled around, and it was like 4 o'clock, and I just got done with my job, and I was going to finish a second one before I went home to pack to do these things. And I thought to myself, man, I ought to stay here, and I ought to get these things done. And then I'll roll up there tomorrow about noon and come in, and I'll do my thing here at 4 o'clock, and then zip right back out, and I'll go back to doing what I normally do. I gave myself a couple of hours to actually go home and sit down and let my dog out of the house, who'd been in there for hours. And, I took that moment to just find some peace and serenity for myself for a second, and it really occurred to me that I needed to be here. I need to do this for myself. I needed to come up here, and I needed to find what I've been missing for the longest time. And because my life has been a whirlwind of insanity, and it's not uncontrollable insanity, but it's just a lot of actions happening in a condensed period of time on a daily basis. So I came up here last night and got checked in, and I found myself driving up here in a slower state. My cruise was set at 65, not 80. I was looking out over the horizons over the mountains and seeing these beautiful clouds and a little bit of sun getting close to setting, and I was actually setting my mind to where it needed to be. I got here, and I was here for probably a couple of hours. Actually, I got here, and a gentleman by the name of Jeff, one of 7 Jeffs that was here for the meeting, he was up there giving his lead, and I actually really began to grasp what this is about. I've been so removed and so outside of myself in many ways that I forgot what the fellowship and the meaning of the fellowship and what it can be and what it can bring in a group of men of what we can do. And sitting there, I felt the God of my understanding come into my presence. Do you know what I mean? I felt physically this come into play. And he brought something up that I let myself be open and honest about at that moment in time. I saw it in his share. I saw it in a different light. And I can't understand why I didn't see this from the very beginning. But I thought about the Serenity Prayer. And in my mind, the Serenity Prayer has always been, it was written I. You know what I mean? In the I version, the singular version, my version, me version. And I let myself open up and get outside of that last night at that meeting at the end after what this man had shared about, and I kind of grasped the bigger part of the we side of it. I opened myself up and I really understand what that means. Just from that we version of that Serenity Prayer, I get it. It's us. It's men. It's what we do. It's the cumulative group of us and the power that we have to be able to feed off of each other and back to each other and actually help each other find a better way to live through this program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I guess what I'm really getting at is that it was the single greatest decision that I've made in the longest time was to actually fulfill the commitment to come up here. Simply because today, when I've been to 3 or 4 of these workshops, I have felt again the power of what we have here today. I mean, literally, physically, I'm feeling it again as I speak. And this is that area that I've been trying to get into, that I've raced to find every day of my life. That little glimpse of what I can grab, that little nugget of serenity and peace and that wholeness, the God of my understanding actually coming into my life and me feeling that presence. And from the moment I had a breakfast sandwich this morning, that first cup of coffee, And each and every time I sat around and I just walked around, I took a walk around the facility, and I mean to tell you, I've taken it in. And I have felt it from that point forward. So I am truly grateful to be among all of you today. I mean, sincerely, from the deepest parts of my heart today, I am grateful. Because you're showing me, again, reminding me. It's not that I forget a lot of times, it's that I forget where and what I need to be focusing on and where I need to be putting that energy. I believe sometimes we only have so much energy, and I really need to figure out, set some things aside and bring it back to where it needs to be as far as like my recovery and those that I bring into my life and the we that I have around me today. That being said, thank you and I'm grateful. And I didn't come into this program very willing. I showed up to try and save my face, job, woman, house, all those things because, you know, I was destroying everything I had and they were on their way out. And all of those things are gone. So, you know, I came in for one reason, to try and save something, and, you know, in a short period of time, and I don't know when it happened, I ended up refocusing my priorities on what I was here to do, and, you know, it ended up saving my life as opposed to, you know, all of my material shit that I thought was important at one time. You know, the job and the woman, which has turned out to be a blessing, that is gone. But, yeah, I got down in Washington, PA, man. There was a little place that I used to go to on a regular every day. It was my that 90 and 90 that we did, and we talked about it the other night. And I would go in there, and on the wall was written all of those things. You know, first things first, keep it simple. You know what I mean? Just for today, one day at a time, and so on and so forth. And I would walk in there, and most days I would cut my head in my hands and just trying to quiet that shit in my mind. But I was able to take those things in and subconsciously I just processed and began to process those things. And working through my steps, you know, 1, 2, and 3 was exposing me to a process of, you know, honesty and trust and acceptance and it got me exposed to something that I've always had in my life, which was, I've known about this in my life. It was a god of my understanding. You know, it's been there since a childhood. It's been there since the beginning that I can really remember, and being a part of that, and that was part of my family upbringing. But it was a spiritual connection that I got from that I was able to rekindle from the beginning of this recovery process. I've been in and out of the rooms since 1987, and it was always normally those foxhole prayers. It was always normally those consequences that brought me back here. It was something that I was always trying to run and avoid from, to try and save ass again and save face and the likes. And I would find something of a spiritual nature in my life for a minute. I would separate myself from that consequence, and then I would revert back to what I would normally do. And the only time that I would ever see a god of my understanding in my life would be when there was something of a terrible nature or some kind of problem again. As I began to work through these steps, I really began to rekindle and find that God working in my life. And as I go along in this process, my perspective is realigning itself. My perspective has changed to a degree that I'm able to see the God of my understanding in my life on a regular basis. And as I've gone through 4 and 5 to you know, identify all of these defects and the negative shit that I do in my life and have done in my life, it's given me the opportunity to work on those slowly as I go through. But as I got into 6 and 7, you know, to me it was all about God. It was all about being willing and open to identify my strengths and my weaknesses and have the ability to accept that, because I was real willing to accept that a lot of things outside there on the, in the street. I was willing to accept whatever was given to me by the drug dealer or you know, my partner, my friend, what was ever put in front of me, the drink that was in there. I was always willing to accept that. I was always willing to accept that I was not going to be able to do certain things or be certain places or have things to get what I needed. I was always willing to accept those things, you know, and to come in here and not be willing to accept the, you know, that I am a decent human and that I am a good man and that I do have good qualities and I am able to love and care and, you know, because I really did feel terrible about myself. I really felt like a piece of shit. I was no good. You know, I always wanted to hold on to those terrible things that I brought into my life. And, you know, as I pushed through the 4 or 5 and got into 6, it was about, for me, accepting fully, wholeheartedly accepting that I am able to let go of a lot of these things, that I am able to accept this God fully into my life and to turn these things over to Him, to let Him work in my life, for me to get out of the way. You know, I think it says in there that our job in step 6 is to be fully willing. What is fully? What are we supposed to do? What is our job? Is to be fully willing to accept the change that had come, that only a God, I think I'm definitely butchering this, but to accept the God, that only a God in our lives could provide. If that made any sense. Yeah. To let the God of my understanding into my life, to be able to work this through me, to be able to let me see that, you know, I am flawed, I am going to make mistakes, there are going to be times when I'm going to act out, but I need to begin to forgive myself and work on letting that happen, that I cannot make these changes on my own. I don't have that kind of power. I mean, I can control these things, try and control these things that I may, but in all actuality, that will not last long. I can push them, I can suppress them, I can not, you know, try and not act on them, but then that's me taking will over those things in my life. That's me actually trying to control those the character defects in my life. And not letting God work through me and through you to begin to let this process happen, to step aside, to let myself be healed and let myself be cleaned of these things over time. And it's a process. It's a forever process. It's what I'm told. So I give myself that chance to actually let it happen. I give myself that chance to make mistakes and to correct those mistakes and to pray about it and to actually work on, you know, not repeating them again. I mean, it's a blessing to be a part of this process. It's a blessing for me to have this God in my life, to be able to step aside, to be able to bring it to every area that I have that I need attention on that. That, you know, as we go through and roll into 7 and letting everything just begin to happen and not acting on those things and turning that over and just letting it be what it is. You know, after making my list and turning that and how it affects me and where the areas and how my life would be without those things, and then to just step aside and let God carry that out for me and to let His will be done, as they so to speak. But I'm not sure there's areas that that I really need to, well, let me rephrase that. I'm not sure that there's areas in my life that I don't need to really be touched by this. I mean, I've got a lot of, still at times I'm struggling with fear and I'm struggling with procrastination. And I still see them rear their ugly heads. I mean, I struggle with my family. I struggle with my stepson, who's been a real constant source of pain in my life, and I've been a constant source of pain in his life, too. I mean, you know, having 8 years clean and breaking my hand on a door. I mean, that kind of thing. It's... You know, and I still struggle with that, and I look at that as something that was new, and this is a stepson of mine, and that, but I got to understand that those were news to me. That was something I had not experienced before in my life. That was something that I didn't have any kind of, you know, I had no worksheet to go off of as far as, like, how do I process these things and how do I handle them. You know, those were some glaring areas, which was anger for me, and that was something that I didn't want to act out on, but I found myself uncontrolled in certain areas. You know, I have since found peace with all of this. I've seeking, you know, I was once told you seek to understand and then maybe one day you will be understood. And I had that whole thing flipped with this young man. I now identify that, you know, he and I may never have that wonderful, loving relationship. He and I may never have that true father-son relationship. But that has a lot to do with, you know, I got him at a, you know, he and I came to have a relationship later in his life, and he was, you know, and I myself, you know, he already had an idea of who his father was and who his father was going to be. And I tried to be that guy, and that just wasn't it, and I don't think we met on a level playing field. And it wasn't leveled, it was certainly not leveled by me, because I believe it, and I know that I kind of instill a lot of my will on him that I thought he should be and how he should act and how he should conduct himself in certain areas, you know. And it took a while for me to identify that I was in the way and I needed to get out of that way. And it took a lot of prayer and talking about it and reaching out and being with the men in my life and the understanding that, you know, things are going to be okay. I need to let this kid be him. I need to let him be who he is. I need to step out of the way and stop forcing my will or putting things in my way, or to let things be as they are and not force my will on them. You know, I believe today that we get along fairly well, and I've even changed that dynamic to another power because he actually works for me now. So not only do I have the whole father-son kind of thing, but, you know, when I say, you know, under for a work-related thing, when I say be here, some days I believe he thinks I'm saying clean your room, you know, or, you know, I need you to show up on time. He said he's here and go mow the grass, you know, and I get met with that resistance. And, you know, I found that, you know, it's easier with him that I meet him on his level. I do believe that he's a lot less mature than your average 23-year-old. He's a younger man, you know, emotionally. So, I mean, he can conduct himself. And the really weird thing is that just when I think this kid hates me, just when I think that you know, he wants nothing to do with me, I get feedback from somebody that says, you know, hey, your son is one of the greatest and nicest and sweetest guys we've met. You know, he had nothing but praise to say about this. Or I hear from his friends or family how well and kind he talks about me, or how he refers to me. I get that aggressive thing, that pushback, and you know, just that deep grit and sandpaper, man, that just rubs on me. But yet, when he's not with me or he's out with somebody else, you know. And I kind of feel like a shitheel when I hear that, to be honest with you, is simply because I'm thinking one thing, and which is always normally wrong thought first, and I get to that point, and you know, that's one of the areas I'm really struggling with now. And you know, like I said, it's brought to light new things and new areas in my life that you know, are being worked on and sanded on and polished on a regular basis. I mean, you know, I've really learned that I've got to think about what I'm thinking about. You know, because if I'm left to my own devices, I mean, in my character defects, I can still dig those out, or I can manipulate those into something that, you know, is molded to what I think is acceptable. And then that's where I have people in my life to call me on my shit, the people in my life to let me know that, you know, that's not right, that's not proper, you know, that is disrespectful, you know, that is of a non-spiritual nature. And so I go back and I resort and I get back into that prayer and meditation and turning these things over to my God. And, you know, I'm a stronger, better, more whole person from being in this program of Narcotics Anonymous, working these steps and identifying and trying to weed out and letting the God of my understanding work through me and you to clean out these defects of character of mine. I'm here today only by the grace of God and yourselves, you know, those people that have come before me, those that have taken me under their wing and guided me when and loved me when I couldn't be loved and showed me a better way, showed me a different way. You know, I'm strong in faith today and belief that, you know, we can change. We can become different people. We can become better versions of what we should be, or the original versions of what we should be. What we should be. I came in here and I've been given the ability to reinvent myself, to become a different man, to actually become a better father, become a better, you know, husband, to become a better son, a better brother. It's only by stacking up a bunch of spiritual principles and trying to apply them in my life on a daily basis. And, you know, with that, I mean, it pays dividends. It really does. There's an end, you know, there's a resonation that comes off of these things that when you put them in there and you begin to apply them in your life on a daily basis, it's like that ripple effect, man. It happens. It doesn't happen fast, and it doesn't happen in large waves, but it's a subtle thing that just constantly happens, man. And before long, there's that perpetual, you know, constant thing that goes on. And I've been seen the same place, the same time. I mean, I've never had I've had one home group since I got here. I mean, who does that? I mean, you know, honestly, does. I've had one sponsor since I got here. Who does that? But, yeah, it's that consistency in my life today. And when I continually try to do the same thing over and over again and have the same result, and it's of a non-spiritual nature, it becomes insanity. But if I'm continuing to practice spiritual principles and I continue to do those again and again in a spiritual way, things begin to change in me and it becomes a good habit, or it becomes a good action. And that's only what has been exposed to me. Yeah, the one thing I've learned is that if I keep coming back here and I get a home group and I get a sponsor and I really push forward and I try to show some empathy and love and reach out to that newcomer that comes in the door. We had an experience last night. We were sitting up around the fire and this young man just come popping up out of the dark, man. I mean, this was 10 o'clock at night. It just kind of rolled up around the fire. There were 7 or 8 of us sitting up there. And you know, one of us got up, gave him a hug. How you doing? He's jumping around. And he sits down. It turns out he just got out of rehab 2 days ago. Somebody told him, come down here and go see the guy sitting around the fire. And he just so happened to park right here. And that was the first fire he saw. You know, and literally, it was the first fire he saw. And he washed up. And there sat 65 years of or more of recovery right around that fire. You know, I mean, talk about boom. And you could see he was sitting there and it was like 50 degrees last night. He's sweating, right? You know what I mean? The amount of courage it took for that young man to walk up and just plop down in a sea of men that he has no idea who they are. You know, I felt that for him last night. When, you know, after it really occurred and we found out who he was, what was going on, it was like, wow, you know, I'm stoked for you, you know, to see this happening, man, that process. I mean, I'm just so charged to be here today, man. I mean, this is tight-knit, you know. And I wonder why I didn't come up here all these years before. You know why? Because I thought my shit was too busy to go in and take this in. I ain't got time to be up here with a bunch of dudes, man, hanging out in the woods, you know. And that the truth of the matter is this is exactly where I needed to be. Exactly the place and the time and the people I needed to be around. You know, I need a spark like this every now and again, and I've got to let myself have that spark. I've got to let myself get that charge of recovery. I mean, just this whole thing is oriented towards us. We. There it is again, man. We. If I stick around here and work some spiritual principles, work some steps, learn to have a God of my understanding that just keeps working in my life, and I keep Him first and foremost in my life along with my recovery program, you know, and some steps. Everything's going to be fine as long as I stay out of my way and I don't put that first one in me, man. I mean, you know, anything is possible, and you know, I heal and become a better man. I become a better version of myself. So, but yeah, man, that's all I got. Thanks. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Okay, our second speaker is from the Dover Group of Narcotics Anonymous in York area of Narcotics Anonymous. That's George L. My name is George, and I'm an addict.
Hey, George.
And I'm clean by God's grace and mercy. And, man, I tell you, that's not just some slick shit I like to say at the beginning. It's something that I say because I mean it with every fiber of my being, man. And God, Bob, it's so refreshing to hear someone come up here and share about God and share about the 12 steps, man. Because it seems like it's in vogue lately that people want to get away from that. You know what I mean? Get away from what the whole program is based on. Gaining a relationship with God through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And then this the men's rap, right? Steps 6 and 7.
Come on.
The men's rap. So I'm going to talk about some men issues. I'm not here to talk about no little boy shit. I didn't travel all the way across this state to talk about kid shit. I'm not talking about, you know, how many women I can sleep with, how many pair of Jordans I got, 22s on my cars, tinted windows, and all kind of shit like that. I'm talking about some men issues, the deep-seated low self-esteem that I feel all the time, of feeling less than, of when something happens, like I feel, you know, less than a man. You know, a lot of times I feel like, you know, I got a little dick, and, you know, it makes me feel less than and shit like that. You know, the reason I feel like that is because I'm stuck watching porn where everybody's got radiator hoses and shit. I'm going to take this off because it makes me feel like a patient. I don't need to be wearing a badge around. But, it's great, man. You know, listen, this is, I'm out of my element right now, I'm going to tell you. I'm from West Baltimore, you know, and there ain't a whole lot of trees and cabins and shit like that. You know what I mean? Bonfires and shit. You know what we call that? We call that arson, where I'm from. So it's like, you know, how beautiful this is to me. You know, because I don't get to see this a lot. Right? So how, like during the day, like I'm sitting there comparing this beautiful thing here to step 6. And how beautiful this is to me, right now. But as soon as it gets dark, this is scary as fuck to me. I will not go walking around here by myself. And that's how my character defects are. You know, step 6 tells us that our character defects are basic human traits blown out of proportion by our self-centeredness. You know? So, I ain't got a whole lot of time. I don't feel... I was looking at it, it said the men's wrap, step 6 and 7, 4 o'clock to 5:15. I didn't know if somebody else was going to be sharing with me or not. I was like, well, an hour and a half, I don't want to share for an hour and a half. That's too goddamn long. You know what I mean? I'll be, you know, starting to talk some nonsense at about 40 minutes. And then they said, no, somebody's sharing with you. And then I was like, well, God damn, that ain't enough time for two of them. You know, that's the mind of an addict. That's the kind of shit we think, right? You know, every time after I share, two thoughts go through my head. Man, I wish I'd have shared that.
Yeah.
And the second one is, God damn, why did I share that? You know, the good thing is that I don't know. I don't know anybody. I do know two people here. So I'm much more comfortable coming up here getting vulnerable in front of a bunch of people that I don't know. You know what I mean? Number one is because I don't see you all the time, so I'm really not afraid of you guys holding me accountable on a daily basis. You know what I mean? You know, because I'm still an addict and I like to get away with some dope fiend shit. But I didn't want to come here either. I've been so, whatever you want to call it, lucky, blessed, fortunate, highly favored, whatever word you got for it, you know, in my life has led me to become, you know, a father, a husband, a business owner, all of these things where I tell myself I'm too busy. Yesterday was my son's 6th birthday. I was going to, you know, celebrate with him, come up last night, you know, throw some resentments in the fire, and I decided, you know what, my son's more important. I'm just going to cancel the whole weekend. You know, they can find anybody can go up there and share on the steps and this and that. You know, they don't need me to come up there and this and that. And the bottom line is because I was tired and I was getting lazy and I was getting complacent. Not just one day, but in my whole recovery. You know, so I called Larry up early in the week and asked him what he was doing. I didn't know if he was on vacation. I said, I'm going to the retreat. And I was like, yeah, man, that's great, man. I'll see you there. He said, let's go. Larry, this dude carried the message to me while I was in state prison. When I walked out of the prison doors, he was there, put me in his truck and took me straight to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I haven't used drugs since June 1st, 2005. And I'll tell you, my home group in the York area is the Dover group. And the only reason I'll tell you that is because some of you might be traveling to see relatives, might be traveling on business, and you might be in the York area and you might need a meeting and you say, God damn, I'm in Dover, Pennsylvania. Where the hell is this? There can't be no meetings in Dover, Pennsylvania. Oh, you know what? That joker George came out and said there is a goddamn meeting in Dover, Pennsylvania. And listen, where I'm from in Baltimore, you know, every Narcotics Anonymous group has a you know, a cool, catchy name and shit like that. You know, the Courage to Change group, you know, whatever your group's name might be. And in Baltimore, everybody calls the meetings by those names. But in York, in the York area, all of those meetings have those names too, but nobody uses those names. All of the meetings, people in conversation are by location. You know what I mean? There's a meeting called Stairway to Recovery, meets in Dallastown, Pennsylvania. Nobody calls it Stairway to Recovery. Everybody calls it the Dallastown meeting. Where are you going tonight? Dallastown meeting. Where are you going tonight? Queen Street meeting. So when we were thinking up a name for our home group, we were trying to think up a catchy name, and we were like, fuck it, they're just going to call it the Dover meeting anyway. But for the meeting list, this is Dover meeting. You know, we're plain, generic, you know. But, yeah, man, I walked out of those prison doors, and my life was never the same because of Narcotics Anonymous. I went to a meeting. Where's we at? Squirrel Hill?
Yeah.
Squirrel Hill. And they made me sit up front. And so my name is George. I'm an addict. I just got released from prison. I don't know how to live in or outside of jail. I don't know how to live with or without drugs. And I'm scared. And they basically stopped the meeting, gave me all the key tags that I had missed in prison, and everybody in that meeting came up and gave me a hug, you know, and I've never felt that kind of love before in my life up to that point, you know. For the first time in my life, and I'm talking, you know, my parents, my family, everything, I've never felt the kind of love that this program gave me and is capable of giving anyone. It's you guys still give me this on a daily basis. That's why I keep coming back. You know, it's a kind of, it's not just because, you know, I don't want to use drugs. That's one of the main things. It's not that I want to be a spiritually and emotionally mature man. It's the love that you give me time after time that I was seeking so long in my life, and I didn't think it was possible for me until I came into Narcotics Anonymous and started myself into my own NA story. Because I'd heard you guys come in and share your stories, you know, great stories, man. You guys had great stories. And reading the stories in the back of the basic text, great inspiring stories, you know. But am I the only one who felt that that wasn't possible for me, even though other people achieved those? Right? Am I the only person who ever thought that? That, you know, I was alone on an island, and the things that you were capable of, I was not capable of. The world had different plans for me, and I set myself in motion to consider myself a victim of circumstances my entire life until I got here. And you guys are the ones who told me, you know, you are not a victim. You're going to be responsible for your recovery. We're not going to cater to you. We're not going to baby you. We're going to tell you the things that you need to hear, not the things that you want to hear. And we promise you, if you keep coming back and not use drugs and do the things that are suggested to you, you just might grow into that spiritually and emotionally mature man that's always been lacking in your life. Not just from me, but from my father, my uncles, all of the people that had given me misinformation about a man was my entire life. Misinformation, you know, have to be the breadwinner, you know, have to take control of things in my life. You know, when I married my wife, talk about low self-esteem. I'm a high school dropout, man, a dirty neck roofer. That's what I am. And I met my wife in Narcotics Anonymous, and she's a college graduate. With a degree in molecular genetics. We've been together 10 years, married almost 9 years, and to this day I've never asked her what molecular genetics was. I'm afraid to get into the conversation with her. You know what I mean? I've automatically told myself I won't understand. It might be a simple explanation for what the fuck it is. I don't know. But I can't possibly fathom myself understanding this. So I do what I've always done my whole entire life. I'll just step aside on that subject. You know? And then, you know. So when I, you know. When I told my wife, you know, that I'll take care of things, the bills and this and that, and, you know, she can, you know, take it easy and this and that. You know, my wife is she's one of those modern women who, you know, she looked at me and she said, like, what are you, crazy? She's like, first of all, let me remind you of how much more money I make than you. I mean, that is not the case today, and because of our children, and the blessings that I've been given, she is able to be a stay-at-home mom. You know, we don't have to send our kids off to the hell you call it?
Daycare.
Yeah, that shit's too expensive anyway. You know what I mean? My wife gets to take them to school and things like that, and I'm able to provide financially. But I will tell you that there is no way in hell that I would want to trade places with her, you know, and the things that she does, you know, the behind the scenes stuff that women do. I don't know about you. I'm gonna say for us, because there might be somebody who can relate to me. If you can identify, then it's for you. If you can't, you know, let it fly. But when you talk about, you know, men's issues, there's no way that I would even be half the man I am today without the strong women in my life. You know what I mean? And I'm not talking about just my wife. I'm talking about the other women in the fellowship who, you know, when they see me not acting according to the spiritual principles that I tell you I practice all the time, you know, they will pull me up and proceed to tell me about myself, you know. And after I get mad, then I'll look at it and realize that they're right and how much I need people like that in my life, man. You know, the men in my life are great. You know, Narcotics Anonymous is a non-profit fellowship of men and women. Right? Men and women. So if we just deny our help to one half of the fellowship, man, how much are we missing out on? You know? So anyway, I'm going to get to the exact nature because I ain't got a lot of time. And I don't want to, you know, sharing's not a competitive sport. And Bob's message, man, he hit it out of the park, man. I'd have just as soon just left and marinated on your message, and I'd have been good. You know, so it's not my challenge today to try to, you know, add to his message, compliment his message. I just don't want to take away from his message tonight. You know what I mean? That's how good it was to me, man. It hung with me. So I ain't got a whole lot of time, so I'm going to get right to what's going on with me, the exact nature today. There's two things. Number one, Laurel Mountain Highlands area, right? Mm-hmm. There's a prison down the street, right? Mm-hmm. So, I had a friend who, I had a get high buddy. We used together for 30 years. And a couple years back, he got out of prison. And ended up that his sister lived like 5 minutes from me in Pennsylvania. I've been in Pennsylvania 11 years now. And, you know, he wanted to, you know, find a new way of life and this and that. I seen him on Facebook, and, you know, he's talking about he didn't want to use drugs anymore. Well, that's great. I just happen to have a program of recovery that I work that just might be able to help. So I called him up and, you know, said, listen, I go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. You know, they've worked wonders for me. You know, you might want to give them a chance. If you want to, I'll pick you up and we'll go to a meeting. So we did, and introduced him to everyone in New York area, Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, we started, you know, rekindling a relationship that we had, a friendship and this and that. And everything was good. You know, everything's always good until it ain't. You know, and he had started dropping off, and then the next thing you know, we see on the news there's a picture of him. He had been breaking into cars at the elementary school, stealing stuff because he started using again. Now, when I saw that, he didn't know that there was a picture of him on the news. And when I saw this, I was it hurt, you know, it hurt. And the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to call the police. You know, listen, he's at the elementary school where my kid is going to go, committing crimes, things like that. I'm a responsible, productive member of society now. The right thing for me to do is, if I know somebody's committing a crime at these kids' school, the right thing for me to do is to call the police. And my sponsee brother, Jimmy, who's in a wheelchair, great guy, he looked at me and he's like, "You fucking rat." Right? Now, he was like half joking but half serious, right? But that shit hit me, you know? I was like, "God damn, Jimmy, rat." You know? But what it did was it made me stop and think, right? Like, you know, through this whole ordeal, the only thing I was worried about was me. How it made me feel. How, you know, I felt betrayed by him. All the time I invested in him. The people I introduced him to. Do you see the pattern here? It's I. And the whole time I'm forgetting that he once again reverted to a still sick and suffering addict, and I'm spiritually mandated to carry the message to him. So, we formulated a plan, me and Jimmy, and we showed him the picture, and he was like, "Oh, fuck." So he came over to my house, and I called the police officer that was on his case, and I talked to the police officer, and I said, "Just, you know, give us a couple weeks. I'm driving him to rehab right now, you know." And that's what I did. I drove him down to Washington, D.C., paid for him to go to detox and put him in rehab. And the police officer, I couldn't believe that the police officer said, "George, I understand. We'll take care of this, you know, when he gets out." And it made me feel like, well, number one, it made me feel like I wasn't a rat. But it made me feel that once I got past my self-centeredness and the effect that this thing had on me, I had done what should come naturally to me all along, is work the program and worry about the still sick and suffering addict. And, you know, so it was all good. Until it wasn't. And he got out. He met a girl in rehab. And he was in rehab 20-some days, met a girl, and they got married like 8 days after he got out. Guess what? It didn't work out. Imagine that. So, anyway, he starts using again, and he's done work at my house. You know, he's at my house all the time. We have a lot of recovering addicts at my house. Every holiday, we open our house up. You know, Labor Day, New Year's Eve. You know, we want to have a safe place for addicts to come. And one Thursday, when I went to my home group, he came and he robbed my house. He robbed my house. And I wasn't really taking it personal or anything like that, but the effect that it had on my wife, you know, our safety was at risk now. You know, we had been violated, and I was forced to get him arrested, you know. And this time I was 100% sure that I did the right thing. And it still didn't feel right, you know. I had to, at a preliminary hearing, my wife and I had to go and testify. And, you know, I was like, "This dude robbed my house," and I'm crying, right? I'm crying, you know, because I know that, you know, how bad this disease had a hold of him for him to rob my house. Listen, you don't have to rob my house. Anybody that knows me, if you need anything from me, all you have to do is ask. You know, but the disease of addiction never asked permission for anything. You know, so it turns out right now he's in prison at Laurel Mountain Highlands. You know, and it's just like not a coincidence that I was invited to come out to Laurel Mountain Highlands, you know, and try to share some experience, strength, and hope. And we just got a letter that he's getting ready to go up for parole. It's 2.5 years he's been locked up. And they asked my wife and I if we wanted to write a letter, you know, for or against him getting parole. You know, if we didn't want him to get parole and this and that, it would weigh heavily. And we decided that we wasn't going to do either one. You know, we were going to let it play out however it plays out. If God and the system deems that he has served his time for this crime, then we are okay with that. If he doesn't make parole and has to do more jail time, we are okay with that too. But I gotta tell you, man, it still stings. You know, when you have to do the things that a man has to do, and then you come out of it not feeling like a man, you know, I just think back to my day, 20, 25 years ago, how, like, it would be unfathomable for me to sit in front of a group of men and say, yes, I called the cops. I got somebody locked up. Not only that, I fucking had to testify on them. It's the right thing. I'm convinced of it. I talk to people. Every single person that I respect and admire in this fellowship, I've talked to them and I've been reassured that I had to do what I had to do. But, it just doesn't feel right. And it's the disease of addiction. Trying to get at me another way. So the end of that story is, I have a little girl. This is part two of what I'm going through right now. I have a little girl, 3.5 years old. When my wife was pregnant, I got the same home group, man. I got the same sponsor since I got out of jail, and Larry told me I had to get one. And same phone number. My address has changed due to my life circumstances. I had a nice little apartment, and my girlfriend moved in. She became my wife. We got a bigger apartment. We had a son. We bought a house. She got pregnant again. We bought a bigger house. And 2 weeks before my daughter was born, my wife tells me that her mother is going to come stay with us for a couple weeks, to help out with the baby. That was 3.5 years ago. Now listen, my mother-in-law is a great person. It's nothing personal against her, but it's just that, I want to try. I don't feel that my family can fully develop, with someone else there all the time. You know what I mean? Because my family, that's my home group for real. Is my family, my wife, my son, and my daughter. That's my original home group. That's where you won't find me once a week. You'll find me there every night of the week, being of service to my original home group. And so my mother-in-law, I didn't know, had some issues with her. She's, number one, she's a hoarder. She suffers from, it's not stuff that you can see on the surface, but there's some, she's completely unmanageable in her finances. My father-in-law, they're separated. My father-in-law and myself have numerous times have had to pay the mortgage payments, electric bills, oil payments. We found out one time she didn't have heat and she was boiling water on the stove and dumping it in a tub to take a bath. And, there's no reason for her to be living like that. She seemed to be incapable of living on her own. So for the past 3.5 years, I'm steadily becoming irritated at times. The only time that I don't get irritated is, when my wife lets me buy something new, and then the feeling goes away for a little bit. And then once the newness and the fun of that wears off, then it's back to, when's she leaving? We go long periods of time without making love, and here's the thing with that, right? Because I was blaming her mother for that the whole time. Well, my wife, who wants to make love with their mother downstairs and this and that, and it has just come to light lately that it was nothing to do with her mother. It was me. It was me and my piss poor attitude about everything. So I come home from work and, a lot of times I would, my kids would want to play with me and this and that, and this would be my version sometimes of playing with the kids. I would lay down on the carpet and let them jump off my shoulders or whatever. You know, there was absolutely nothing I was doing. You know what I mean? But they were having fun. You know what I mean? But I was dope fiending my way, you know, and then I'd take a picture and put it on Facebook and look what a great dad I am, having fun with my kids, doing this and that. And really, I was just being a lazy, miserable piece of shit. You know? And it's, you know, it doesn't make me feel better to come in here and tell people that, you know, that, you know, when I look back on it, you know, I feel like, you know, I was there in body, but where was my spirit? You know, I wasn't there like I was supposed to be there. You know what I mean? And finally, you know, my wife and I, we had to sit down and have a long talk about, you know, what is going on in our lives, you know, because we went to counseling and to try to see what was going on. And the last counseling session we was at, our counselor told us, listen, we're going to have to work on an exit plan right now. I don't think there's nothing we can do, and you two do not deserve to be together anymore, you know. And we left that counseling session and shit. I think a couple of days later she was pregnant with my daughter. So, but anyway, I come from the gutter. I come from nothing, and now I'm in a position where I'm basically able to do whatever I want in life. You know, there's, you know, I'm able to travel the world, do whatever, buy whatever, and you know, the whole time I'm doing this, you know, I'm telling my wife, you know, these are dreams I've had. I've had dreams of doing this. I dream of doing that, you know. And the whole time, while I'm expressing all of my dreams and desires to her, I'm not once taking into account her dreams and then the effect that I was having on her. Listen, there was a time when I was running to every damn Narcotics Anonymous convention that there was, man, all around this country. I was speaking here, speaking there, speaking there. I was running out of the house to go carry the message the same way I was running out of the house to go smoke crack and shoot dope. Not living the message is meaningless unless we live it. And all that shit, I was talking to people everywhere. It didn't mean nothing. I couldn't even concentrate on the message I was carrying because I was always worried about impressing somebody and getting an invitation to the next event. Just like an active addiction. Always worried about the next one. So, my mother-in-law is still there, and we've had... it turned out my wife didn't want to make love to me because of my attitude and the way that I was, you know. And now, and that was like crushing to me, because I'm like, well, what do you mean? I'm a fucking hell of a guy, you know. Don't you know, I'm a shit. Don't you, I'm business. Don't you see all them trucks out there and, you know, all them fucking CDs of me in the drawer, you know. And it turned out, you know, my wife isn't impressed by that shit, you know. Anybody worth their salt isn't impressed by that shit, you know. What people get impressed by is, do you do what you say? Do you make a commitment and stick to that commitment? I didn't want to come here today. I didn't want to come here. I came here with no plans. I didn't know where I was going to stay, a cabin, anything like that. I turned the corner and my friend Jeff and Larry was there. It was like, you know, holy shit. What are we, you know, like God has consistently and constantly put people in my life just when I needed them, man. You know? So we've come to the agreement that my... Here's the thing. My mother-in-law has a house that she rents to her son and his family. Now, while I'm living at my house. So she's collecting rent from them, living rent-free at my house. Now listen... Stevie Wonder can see that something ain't right with that. You know? And it's not like I need her rent money or anything, but it's just the feeling that, you know, I'm getting taken advantage of again. You know? Because the fact of the matter is, in all of this situation, I still want to have control. I still want to have the upper hand. I want to be the boss. I don't deep down inside somewhere, I still don't want our marriage to be equal parts. I want it to be me saying what goes, her follow it, but dress those defects up in spiritual clothing. So her brother's going to buy the house, but he can't get a mortgage yet, so so it's like I'm probably going to have to give him $5,000 or $10,000 in the spring, and in the meantime, pay for her mother to live in an apartment somewhere outside of the house, which is more. And I got to tell you, I've never been happier to spend this money in my gospel life. I mean, listen, because now she was in my son's. My son was sleeping in our room. She was in his room, and she's a fucking hoarder, you know. So everything was a mess, and I was like, "Ah, we can't have this." But we moved her downstairs, which was supposed to be my theater room and my man cave and this and that. You know, listen, I got a whole storage area full of Ravens and Orioles sports memorabilia and Game of Thrones memorabilia. I mean, listen, I'm just waiting for the moment where I can, you know, reclaim my basement, you know. But here's the thing. In my last house, the basement was mine. And guess where I spent all my time? I spent it in the basement and not with my family. So maybe it's God's way of saying, you know, you need to interact with these people that you call your family. You know, not that I call my family, that are my family, but not just in name only. Be a family. Don't be down in the basement on your computer. Like, listen, I bought a BMW, and from the moment I bought that car years ago, my wife would catch me online looking at new cars. You know what I mean? And she's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you? You know, like you're always obsessed with something." You know, because deep down inside, I still feel like you guys won't accept me, won't love me for who I am. So I got to try to impress you with outside things to make you say, "Yeah, look at George." You know, when the biggest thing that you guys can do for me is say, "Look at George being a good dad. Look at George being a good friend. Look at George showing up to the commitments that he says he's going to show up to." That's what's really important to me. That's what the humility of the seventh step talks about. That's what step six talks about when it in the basic text when it says when it talks about growing into mature consciousness. The ability to practice a spiritual principle in place of a defect that comes to me most naturally. You know, without thinking, without warning, without my permission, without my consent, it pops up, growing aware of that and placing a spiritual principle there instead. The sixth step has three of them. Three of them I've been through, and each one has tore the fur off my ass. You know, because I told you, I think I'm a hell of a guy. So when I'm engaged in this sixth step, and I'm writing, and I'm finding myself acting out on the same goddamn character defects at 14 years as I acted out with in 2 weeks clean, it's disheartening. Because I feel like I'm at this place in my life, in this position in my life, where I should be doing better. But the most frustrating thing about recovery is that doing better, knowing better, doesn't always equal to doing better. Very frustrating process. So I don't know what the hell I said here tonight. I don't know where this is going to go. All I know is I heard somebody share about their in-laws, and it sparked something in me. And I need to be a full-time spiritually and emotionally man. You know, not just when, you know, I'm being recorded, not just when I'm at an NA event, not when I'm trying to look good for people, not when I'm trying to sound good for people, not when I'm trying to hide behind phony fucking images that I did all my life. Why am I still doing it? Why can't I just come in and tell the people that are close to me the exact nature of what I'm struggling with? Because for real, that's what a man is supposed to do. A man is not supposed to be afraid to ask for help. How many times the old stereotype of us is that we'll drive around for hours and hours and hours before we'll ask people for direction, right? Right? It's the same way in Narcotics Anonymous. I'll practice the defects and practice the defects and practice the defects before I go to my sponsor and start asking for direction. And all of a sudden, you look at me like I've never been in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in my life. And that's not the kind of man I want to be. The next time that someone sees me, I want to be able to relay the progress of my situation. I don't want to say I'm still resentful of my mother-in-law living in the basement. I want to say I've either, you know, helped her out, you know, the same way that I helped my friend Dave out. I want to be able to help my mother-in-law out, you know, anything that I need to do. Not just financial contributions. Maybe I need to sit down and have a talk with her. Because I never have. I've never sat down and had honest-to-honest goodness conversation with her, just me and her. You know, maybe I need to get to her on that level, Bob. You know, because it's not a level playing field. She's playing pro, and I'm playing high school. That's the way it seems. You know? I'm with a wiffle ball bat trying to hit a Randy Johnson fastball. And it's just never going to happen, man. So, Narcotics Anonymous, you guys told me you don't care about what or how much I used or what my problems were. What my problems were and what you can do to help. My problem is my perception of external circumstances in my life that I still think that I'm a victim of. That's my problem. I need you guys to help me, man. And hopefully, I can get that in one form or another. So, thanks for letting me share.